This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
I'm with Professor Elcio Abdallah from the University of Sao Paulo. Hello, Elcio.
Hello.
Thank you for being with us. Could I just ask you to describe in a few words what your research involves and what you do on a daily basis?
I've been working since many years with quantum field theory. So I started with elementary particles and models of field theory. And since something like 10, 15 years, I've been interested in problems in gravity, cosmology, and all that. Mainly in the recent years, I found a very interesting problem which concerns to the dark part of the universe. So the universe is 95% unknown, and there is this question of two-thirds of the universe being described by some very strange object called dark energy, which is a kind of repulsive in the very large scale, and dark matter, which is clumping, attracting matter, but which is basically unknown, and I would like to know a bit more about these objects from the standpoint of field theory.
For most of our listeners would think, if you start off in particle physics, how can you then shift to cosmology, you know, because it's two fields that seem to be at direct opposites. So could you maybe explain what the link would be, how you would get from particle physics to cosmology?
Well, in fact, they are not so different in the sense that all of them are describing basic interactions of the universe. So our aim is to have a physical description of the universe, which is unified from the very small to the very large. And we know by experience that this is not only not impossible, but this is feasible and important, because the early universe is actually described by quantum fields, and actually the behavior of these quantum fields, they basically predict the evolution of the universe and the history of the universe as a whole. So particle physics and cosmology are actually very tightly related, and they have necessity of one another. They need one another to be completely describable by the same kind of physics.
I see, that's really interesting. And so you mentioned that you're particularly interested in dark matter and indeed dark energy. Could you go into a bit more detail about these things and what scientists think they actually are? Because, of course, they have the name dark, so that means we don't really know, but, of course, there are theories. So could you maybe explain a bit about that?
Yes, actually, the names are not very good, because, in principle, energy and matter are basically the same thing. But for historical reasons, they are called dark matter and dark energy for the following reasons. What is dark matter? It's a dark part of the universe, dark in the sense that it's not seen, because this part does not interact with light. But it's of the same kind of matter that we touch. So it's actually different. It's actually a fluid that we don't know what it is, that we don't see, and that has no electric interaction. So not being electrical means that we can pass through it and not feel it, but we are attracted to it. And if we look at objects that fly around our galaxy, we see that they are attracted by the galaxy much more than what we would expect from the visible matter. And that points to an existence of an object, a fluid or anything that attracts. This has been predicted already 80 years ago and never touched or never directly observed, but by its gravitational interaction. And we call it dark matter for historical reasons. It is presumably the content of one-third of the mass of the universe, roughly speaking, one-third, one-fourth.
Okay.
Then we have the other part of the universe, which is more recent. It's also dark because we don't see it, but we feel its presence by means of observing very distant objects, namely far away supernovae that explode, and by which we can compute its acceleration. And then we see that there is a part of the universe that, in very simple words, it repels this supernova. It's actually not a repelling behavior, but in practice, it's what we see, that the universe is accelerating by means of the existence of a dark part also of the universe, which has this effect. It has a kind of pressure that pulls out, expands the universe in an accelerated way. It's like if you throw a stone in the air, if you are Hercules and throw with a very big force, it's going to go up, but it's going to eventually fall down. Yeah. In the universe is different. You throw a stone, if you are a Herculean mythological being,
yeah,
you throw something with a big, big force, and then suddenly it goes out very fast and accelerating away from us. This is the effect of the so-called dark energy, which constitutes something roughly 2/3 of the universe.
And so because we can't yet observe these things, your work involves mainly building mathematical models and seeing how theoretically these dark energy, dark matter might interact with the rest of the universe. But how do you go about that? Because you have to start at some point, I'm assuming, but because it's a mathematical model, you can kind of start wherever you like. So could you explain maybe to our listeners how one goes about constructing a mathematical model of something that we've never seen?
Yes, this is actually the kind of description that we physicists are used to. This is the so-called scientific method. You have some assumptions. So my assumptions are very general, that I can describe the universe by mathematical objects. I have a name for them. So let me call them quantum fields, but you can call it anything you like. You can give a name to it.
Okay.
So I use these objects to build models, and then I want to see the consequence of these models. So what I see as a consequence is that I can, given a model, describe the acceleration. I can, given the same model, describe the structure of the universe. I can have the distribution of matter in the universe. I can know the amount of radiation that comes from a certain part of the universe. And these things I can compare to observations. So let's say I know how these things influence the radiation, although they don't interact with radiation directly. They influence how it comes to us. And then I compute the difference between having this dark matter and dark energy and not having them. And then I compare the observations and compare what I would have with interaction and without interaction, or with dark matter, without dark matter, with dark energy, without dark energy. And then I can conclude that my model is a better description of the universe or not. If it is a better description, then I accept it as a description of the universe, which I give the name correct. So
uh-huh.
I improve my knowledge of the universe by means of this, we could say, indirect way, but we scientists, we think that this is the only way of having descriptions. I mean, making assumptions, having proposals, looking at the observations, mm-hmm. and concluding.
Until the next set of data comes along, and then
the next set of data, and then the next person that says, "Oh, look, your model is not quite correct. There's something missing, or there's something very wrong with it." So we have to accept and start again from scratch. Maybe from scratch. Maybe improving the previous model.
Coming back to the question of dark matter, correct me if I'm wrong, but if it's something that doesn't interact with radiation or electromagnetic radiation or doesn't emit anything, will it ever be possible to truly sort of directly detect it?
Well, this is a good question. No? We actually don't know. We make models. Make models and predict. But we cannot really say so much because we know so little. No, so the only thing we know for sure is that these objects, they do interact by means of gravity. So there is, to start with, one kind of interaction is gravitation. So gravity is a universal interaction. From point of view of physics, this is a wonderful interaction. That's what has led to Newton's equations. That's what's led to the revolution of general relativity and Einstein theory of gravity. It's one problem that is very dear to us physicists. Maybe we do a new step using again theory of gravity and its modifications.
Yeah, that is a nice way of putting it. So, what does the universe look like according to the most up-to-date models at the moment? What are sort of the global properties? So you mentioned dark matter, dark energy, and then regular matter. Is that as far as we've got?
That's as far as we got. And the description of the history of the universe is also very dear to us in the sense that we predict, or if you like to be more precise, you post-dict the behavior of the universe. So you look far away and you search for our past, for the past of the universe, looking far away. And we conclude that this is a universe that has an evolution that has lived up to now from Big Bang. And it's a description that makes sense and is compatible with the observations.
Moving on to a slightly different subject, you're involved with the BINGO project, I believe. So that's a telescope project that's underway. And could you actually tell us a bit more about that project?
So the BINGO project is a project that aims to look at a very specific snapshot of the universe. If you look at the hydrogen, it has a radio emission that is very long-lived. It takes a long time for this radiation to be produced, which is the 21 centimeter line, which is the comparison between the energy levels of the hydrogen when the spins of the electron and proton are in the same direction or different direction.
Uh-huh.
And since the hydrogen is so common in the universe, actually it's something like 70 to 80% of the mass of the visible universe, then we can have a map, a very detailed map of the universe if we know this line. And searching for such a line, we know properties of the hydrogen distribution, which can give us a very detailed map of what we have and what we expect that we can compare with our models. That's quite new. It's basically a new view of the universe, which is not just the radiation sent to us by the stars, but mm-hmm. also by the most inert matter, the clouds distributed around the universe. So it's a new window of information that is there, is so common and so important at the same time for us to restrain our models.
Right, that's really interesting. So this is the next step in the sort of endless cycle of data, model, data. So you want to get some new information. So it's a radio telescope, and where is it going to be built?
Well, our plan is to build it in Latin America, more specifically in a quarry in the north of Uruguay, which has several good properties. It's a quiet place from the point of view of interference from radio activities.
Mm-hmm.
Uruguay is quite an empty country where the electromagnetic pollution is still absent. And also we have a good view of the South Pole, which can be taken as a standard in terms of observation. So we observe the sky, and at the same time we observe always the fixed point in the South Celestial Pole. And this comparison can give us a very detailed map of the sky in a fixed direction with respect to the latitude of the Earth. So we are going to have a detailed map of the universe in that direction, which would permit also a detailed map of the matter distribution.
Excellent. Well, I hope that the project comes to fruition and that you get all the data that you
I
like for
so.
your models. And thank you very much for talking to us today.
It was a pleasure.